Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, August 9th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered or encountered. And these tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect in my life for the past 17-plus years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. And it's also a tool I've been using to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us have been gifted. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. It's absolutely free. You don't even have to sign up for a mailing list. You just click on the link, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. It's also on that same page, there's a list of audio files you can download, like shows like this one where people have been step through that worksheet process. Or they've given powerful testimonials about how the use of that worksheet process has improved their life. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, and part of the reason we hope that is because our experience has been that the use of these tools improves life, improves quality of life, improves relationships. And the other part is because it might generate some comments or questions. And if you do that, go to that website, download those tools, put them to use in your life, or have any kind of questions about how to do that, then you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. And press 1, and it will put a little question up by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code. And we can have a conversation. We can learn from each other in this process. We're also doing the Course in Miracles lessons from the workbook this year. And today, being the 221st day of the year, puts us into a segment. We've wrapped up the review, lesson 199, I am not a body, I am free, and lesson 200, there is no peace except the peace of God, from this past weekend. And now there's an introduction, and then there is a question about what is forgiveness, and then today's lesson. So what I will mention is that in the introduction, it's quite long from my perspective, but it says, basically, words will mean very little to us now. We use them but as guides on which we do not now depend. For now we seek the direct experience of the truth of life alone. The lessons that remain are merely introductions to the times in which we leave the world of pain and go to enter peace. Now we begin to reach the goal this course has set, and we find the end toward which our practicing was geared. So, quite a few more paragraphs there in that introduction, but then I wanted to read the commentary on what is forgiveness. It says, forgiveness recognizes that what you thought your brother did to you has not occurred. It does not pardon sins and make them real. It sees there was no sin. So forgiveness as a process is the recognition that there is no sin. Forgiveness as a process is the dismantling of the false belief that anyone or anything has any capacity to hurt you. And in that view, all of your, quote, sins, close quotes, are forgiven. In other words, seen as never having happened. What is sin except a false idea about the Creator's offspring? Forgiveness merely sees the falsity and therefore lets it go. What then is free to take its place is the will of the Creator. An unforgiving thought is one which makes a judgment that it will not raise to doubt, even though it's not true. The mind is closed and will not be released. The thought projects projection, tightening its chains so that distortions are more veiled and more obscure, less easily accessible to doubt, and further kept from reason. What can come between a fixed protection and the aim that it has chosen as its wanted goal? An unforgiving thought does many things. In frantic action, it pursues its goal, twisting and overturning what it sees as interfering with its chosen path. Distortion is its purpose and the means by which it would accomplish it as well. It sets about its furious attempts to smash reality without concern for anything that would appear to pose a contradiction to its point of view. Forgiveness, on the other hand, is still and quietly does nothing. It offends no aspect of reality, nor seeks to twist it to appearances that it likes. It merely looks and waits and judges not. It looks, it waits and accepts and allows and surrenders. He who would not forgive must judge, for he must justify his failure to forgive. But he who would forgive himself must learn to welcome truth exactly as it is. Do nothing then, and let forgiveness show you what to do. Through him who is your guide, the Savior and protector, strong in hope and certain of your ultimate success, the Creator has forgiven you already, for such is his function, given to him by God. Now must you share in this function and forgive or dismantle any false perceptions you have about he who was saved. This sinlessness that he sees and whom he honors as the offspring of creation. There was never anything to forgive. There is only life. There is only the flow of love and creation. So lesson 221 for today reads, peace to my mind, let all my thoughts be still. Father, I come to you today to seek the peace that you alone can give. I come in silence, in the quiet of my heart, the deep recesses of my mind. I wait and listen for your voice. My Father, speak to me today. I come to hear your voice in silence and in certainty and love. I'm certain that you will hear my call and answer me. Now do we wait in quiet. The Creator is here because we wait together. I am sure the Creator will speak to you and you will hear. Accept my confidence, for it is yours. Our minds are joined. We wait with one intent, to hear our Creator's answer to our call, to let our thoughts be still and find his peace, to hear him speak to us of what we are and to reveal himself unto his offspring. And Pam Grout from her Course in Miracles experiment book, which we have been following along this year, reads her lesson, well, she has an intro to the lesson 221. It says, welcome to Nirvana, or part two. She quotes Deva Premal as saying, we don't need to know. We just need to dance and sing. Pam writes, the lessons that remain are short, a sort of welcome mat for the realm of inner stillness that we enter into each day. Because so many of them use the G word, and because so many of us still regard G as a critical douchebag with killer surveillance system, a large percentage of these final lessons are ranked as rip that sucker out. Don't get hung up on words or how much time is needed. Spend as long as makes you happy. There are no rules, no bylaws, no judging. Each lesson has a central message. Administer as needed. Let's say you forget that glory and perfect joy are your inheritance, or you mistakenly respond to an illusion with judgment, not love. When that happens, simply stop, be still, and let love wash over you. Her lesson 221 is titled, Path to Transcendence. She quotes Hafiz as saying, an awake heart is like a sky that pours light. Pam writes, A Course in Miracles says, once we take sorrow off the throne, enlightenment is our naturally occurring, organic state of being. It says, we've become so accustomed to living in the, quote, life sucks, close quotes, paradigm, that it never occurs to us that another reality, a happy reality, is possible. Pain, loneliness, and fear are the context within which we live our lives. We're so conditioned to wallow in misery that the concept of life as a joyous adventure seems impossible or even unnatural. Sure, we can buy that there will be happy events. In fact, we look forward to holidays and birthdays and time off work. But to believe that happiness is possible 24/7 is a big stretch. In lesson 221, let all my thoughts be still. I recognize that happiness and everything I seek is already within me, within every person, within every situation. There are no exceptions to this rule. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson and our Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And we have 40-some minutes left to answer questions or to discuss a particular topic of your choosing or to field a refutation. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1 and let us know how we can best serve you. I was delighted to get to this lesson in the Course in Miracles where it talks about how the truth of forgiveness is the removal of the belief, the erroneous belief that someone has offended you or me or anyone else. It's the recognition that we will come to learn at deeper and deeper levels the truth of how no one has ever taken anything from us of value and no one can ever add anything of value to our true nature. And in essence, there is an infinite number of different, more accurate, more flexible and loving ways to look at the world than anything we've previously been taught. And the reason for that is pretty simple. It comes down to the fact that most of the people in our culture have been taught to value their logical, and I say that in quotes, logic in quotes, thought process over their intuition, their connection to a higher self, their ability to step back and just appreciate the flow of life and the miracle of life that is a privilege for them to be able to participate in. So when I think, oh, I know how life should go, I know what should be happening, and it's different from what's actually unfolding, I create my suffering. I create the belief that there's something bad that happened, and I judge it as bad and wrong, and then I am living in the opposite of the process of forgiveness. And I'm living basically in the fantasy, in the hallucination that says the world I want to see, the world I can imagine with my tiny little logical mind, is infinitely better than the world that creation itself is unfolding. And there are few things that will bring more immediate suffering and pain than that ridiculously, arrogant position. So here we are. We're in the flow of life. And life itself is expressing in, through, as and around each one of us. And as that happens, we come to believe that we know better than life itself. And when that happens, we're in trouble. How do we know we're in trouble? We start to feel a negative emotional state. what's the best thing I can do when I come to feel a negative emotional state? Take a breath. Hold it at the top when it's nice, comfortably full lungs. Resist the exhale and turn the focus inside myself. Once the focus is inside me, I want to ask very gently, with as much open, honest surrender as I can, how am I creating this emotion? And then I want to keep that gentle breath going, the kind that triggers the rest and digest response. It triggers the parasympathetic nervous system. And I take a nice deep breath, hold it for a couple counts, and long, slow exhale. And as I resist that exhale, again, I turn the focus inside myself and I ask, how am I creating this emotion? Alternatively, I might ask, what am I making this situation mean? What's the interpretation I have generated and placed on this moment of life? And once I do that, once I see the interpretation, I'll start to see the thought structure that I've been pouring my mind energy into, which is the thing which is causing my emotions, nothing else. So here I am experiencing an emotion that I don't like. Here I am doing some process that feels like I'm suffering and I'm in pain or I'm in sadness or fear or anger, and I don't like it. And now with a breath or two and a question or two, I open the doorway, the keyway to being able to see how I'm the one who's actively creating the very emotion I say I don't want to feel. I'm the one who's created the interpretation of this neutral life event as something that's negative. And once I see that, and I see it fully and clearly, then it loses the power it had moments before to create the pain and suffering in my life. Beyond that initial phase of taking a breath, holding it at the top, slowly exhaling and turning the focus inside, and asking myself, how am I creating this emotion? I can step into the use of the reality management worksheet. I can download that worksheet absolutely free from a number of websites, including whyagain.org and mindshiftersacademy.org. I can use that worksheet to map out in the first three steps what it is I'm doing with my conscious logical mind that's creating the upset I say I don't want to feel. And what it is that my mind is telling me absolutely has to happen in the world around me or inside myself before I'll be free of this pain and suffering. I get to map out the goal that my mind is telling me absolutely must happen if I'm to be free of this suffering. And then I reconnect with this flow of life, with the presence of love, with my true nature. And then I cancel the goal and ask to be shown something else. I cancel everything that my conscious logical mind would train me to or would drive me towards pursuing. I cancel it all and I ask to be shown something else. And when I do that, I've opened up the potential for healing. I've also opened up in that moment the potential that I will begin to see all kinds of options that were not available to me when I was creating my experience with my conscious logical mind and holding on to the goal that my mind said has to happen in order for me to have peace or resolution. And this process consistently and persistently applied, well, it's beyond words in its effectiveness, in its ability to transform lives. And that's why we donate our time to this show, and that's why we're here to answer your comments and questions about it at 563-999-3581. It is an honor to be able to support people in learning this and strengthening their skill with this tool. It's an honor to be engaged in this process and learn more and more about people around the globe who are working for mental, emotional, some would say spiritual health in different ways. I was just introduced to the Jacobs Company, jacobs.com, and they have over 55,000 people worldwide. And one of the people in their company, who's a salesperson essentially, decided to advocate for mental health within their company and mental health resources, and created the 1 Million Lives program. And the 1 Million Lives is a reference to the fact that about 1 million people every year end their life with suicide. And it's a reference to the idea that mental health issues are not given the energy that they need to be resolved effectively. And yet we do have effective tools. We do have really good knowledge of the fact that if people engage in mental emotional hygiene on a daily basis, the same way they engage in physical hygiene, their lives get better by leaps and bounds. So you can look that up. You can follow them. I'm honored to be able to interview Paul Hendry, who's with the 1 Million Lives Project. But you can look up jacobs.com and read about this company that basically they do construction around the globe. And they've got, as I said, over 55,000 employees. And they do over $14 billion of annual revenue in 40-plus countries. But they have over 2,000 people trained in positive mental health championships, or to be a positive mental health champion. And they've had a 25% reduction in employee recordable incidents in just 2020 alone. So the need for tools, the need for effective tools has been known. The presence of tools is known, and yet we still have a need to raise the conversation, to bring people's awareness to all of these tools and the need for the tools. So, does that spark any comments or questions from anybody? We're trying to turn on the microphone for Ellen. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We have the spinning wheel. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you about the possibility of using dream material in doing a worksheet or one of these other tools. Because every so often I have a dream that really scares me. It's always the same kind of thing. And it happened again over the weekend. And for the first time, I actually, because usually what happens when I get really scared in a dream, I wake myself up. And in these dreams, I get attacked by some sort of a dark force that just, it's like I can literally feel it taking me over. And this feeling that I get, like I've never had that in my waking life. But in my dream life, it's so intense and it scares me so much. And for the first time that I've had one of these dreams, over the weekend when it happened, when I woke myself up, I was still feeling that feeling. I was just like laying there and going, oh, my God. It's like my whole body is just buzzing with this feeling that I've only ever felt before in my dreams, when I feel so afraid of this, whatever this force is that feels like it's attacking me. So I know it's something I need to resolve, because it keep, otherwise why would it, right, keep showing up in my dreams, even though it's not something I experience in my waking life. Would you say that that's
okay?
Accurate?
Yeah, so to begin with this work, we just start at the beginning. You'll do so much better with this if you accurately define it. Instead of saying, it scares me, it scared me, it scared me, it is so scary.
Mm-hmm.
To say instead, I had a dream that I interpret in such a way that it generates a lot of fear, that I generate a lot of fear. So I'm generating the fear based on my interpretation of this dream.
Exactly.
So if you just start saying it that way, then you're talking about it more accurately, and then there's a better chance that your mind can process it more accurately.
Okay.
And then the next thing is to just do exactly the same you would with anything else, any thought, any waking thought that would leave me with a negative emotion. And you've got both of them in the dream. You've got a thought and an emotion. And so, yeah, I've done a number of worksheets on things that came up in dreams that were upsetting or that I interpreted as upsetting. And then I'm always working with my thoughts about either the dream or the life experience. And there are a lot of people who tell us, you know what, our waking lives are not as real as our true life or our dreams. So yeah, I would strongly encourage you to do a worksheet on it. And just that way, what's the thought? What's the negative emotion? Well, the negative emotion is fear. And what's the thought? What's the image that you have in the dream?
That's what I'm not sure of, because the fear comes on so instantly. I never, I guess, associated a thought with it, but I'm sure there must be.
Well, what's the dynamic in the dream?
Well, usually the way it happens, it wasn't this way over the weekend, but usually what happens is it's associated with either a light going out or not being able to turn on a light, and I'm in the dark, and suddenly I feel a presence there, and I can't see it. And then all of a sudden it like takes me over. It literally like comes inside of me.
And does what?
I just feel like, I don't know, I just feel this really intense energy inside of me, and it's, you know, that's what I'm interpreting, that's what I'm afraid of, like that I'm being taken over by some unseen, unknown force. I guess that's the thought, right?
Okay, that could be, right? And so the goal is I want to remain in control. And then you'll have to cancel that goal eventually.
Right. Well, what was so interesting about when it happened, because I never like take a nap in the afternoon or whatever. I never do that. But I don't know, something just told me to just lay down on the bed. It was the middle of the day. And I just surrendered myself totally to God, you know, in that moment. And I was just like, You know, I just totally surrendered myself, and I was just laying there, and then the next thing I knew, I was having this dream, and it went right to that place, and like I said, when I came out of it, I was still feeling it so intensely, and so then I'm not afraid anymore, though, because I'm awake, but I'm still feeling this feeling in my body. And I'm asking myself, like, okay, so what is this? What does this feel like? And I couldn't even put any words around it other than maybe electrical. It was very intense. But I really began to think that, oh, well, maybe this isn't what I think it is at all. Maybe this is like increasing my frequency, like, because it felt so, like that kind of a thing. And I thought,
well,
maybe I have been interpreting this wrong all along.
Well, obviously you are, because you're generating fear. Right?
Right.
Anytime I generate a negative emotion, I understand I'm not seeing the whole picture. I'm not interpreting it accurately. And so, you know, the first thing that comes to me is to talk about it. It's not scary, but I'm generating an interpretation that's bringing up a lot of fear. And then the next thing is you talk about this, the lights go out, and then something takes over me. So that,
mm-hmm.
you know, my best guess from those words is you don't want to be taken over. You want to remain autonomous, or you want to remain in control, and then that's the goal you're going to have to cancel. Right. Essentially, you want to maintain the status quo, and change is coming, and you don't want that change.
That sounds like, but I do want the change.
Right. I want change. It's just that I don't want to change. I want my fundamental self to be here. It's like the man, you know, he was made of salt, and he wanted to taste eternity. And so the spiritual teacher said, well, certainly, come on over here right by the ocean and put your foot in the ocean. And he dips a toe in, and his toe disappears, and he goes, well, what are you trying to do? And the guy says, look, this is it. You can taste eternity. You just can't have yourself and eternity, because yourself is all false. Yourself is this constellation of shoulds and shouldn'ts and judgments and that's not your true self anyway. And your true self is the eternal. And you can experience it, but to do that, you have to let go of everything you're holding on to.
Yeah, so I'm really beginning to think that I've been interpreting, like, and I don't even know what, like, God's love or, you know, true love feels like. I can't say that I've ever experienced it, or if I did experience it, I didn't know that that's what it was. And now I'm beginning to wonder if this feeling that I get that I'm so afraid of is not evil, but it's love. I mean, if I knew it were love, I wouldn't be afraid of it.
Right, except that that's the whole thing that we are doing, all of us are doing almost all the time. Right. We'll send up the prayer that says, Dear Lord, answer my prayer. Save me. Give me the guidance. And then something happens and we go, not that. Wait, I thought you said you wanted God's love. Yeah, but I don't want it to feel like, you know, a dream where the lights go out and then something takes over me and it feels almost electrical. I don't want it to be like that. Oh, okay. Then you really don't want God's love. What you want, you don't want the fullness of life. What you want is another thought structure that you've projected out into the world to be true for you. That's why I talk so much about this in this work. A lot of times when people are beginning this work, they say, I'm willing, I'm willing, I'm willing, and they have no idea what willingness is. They just have the word.
Right, they haven't
and
faced
the,
that.
The, that. Well,
fear.
The ego is telling them that they're willing, and they don't even know what that means. They don't know what they're going to have to experience or go through. And so when we begin this work, we're nowhere near as willing as we will be, as we will develop the willingness over time, as we demonstrate to ourselves that we can go through these things that feel like they're going to demolish us, and we survive anyway. So this willingness grows and develops through the practice, but it is not what most of us think about in the beginning.
So one thing I'm thinking that I can do for practice, because this doesn't happen to me in my waking life, is to instruct myself that the next time this up in a dream, to remember that there really is no such thing as fear, and therefore it is safe for me to surrender to this force.
That would be an interesting dream.
And see what happens. I mean, it's only a dream anyway, right? So
well, that's right. And it reminds me of a story Guy Finley tells. Guy Finley doesn't tell a lot of stories about his own personal life very much. He uses a lot of these metaphors and parables and things. But he said, but here's one that's a real story. And he used to have a recurring dream, terror dream. And in the dream, there were these three witches, you know, working over a cauldron. And every time it was terrifying, and they would throw a spell at him or something, and he would run, and it was just terrifying. And it happened for years, this recurring dream of terror that these witches were after him. And finally, he has no idea how this happened. Finally, one night he had the dream, and he confronted the witches straight up. He didn't run from them, and they just disappeared.
And then he never had it.
Yeah, he never had that recurring nightmare again. So you will probably, as you said, you keep having this, you'll probably keep having it until you embrace it.
Yeah, and so because my conscious mind says, well, there is no such thing as evil. But obviously, in my unconscious, there's a real fear of evil. Otherwise, I wouldn't be having this dream. But I instructed myself, like I used to be a smoker. And when I quit smoking, I was having dreams every night that I had started smoking again. And I would just feel this insane amount of guilt, and I'd wake up in the morning feeling that until I remembered, oh, wait a minute, I didn't start smoking again. But it kept happening over and over and over again, and it was just such a burden. And someone said to me, well, why don't you just give yourself permission to smoke in the dream? So I did. I said, okay, it's just a dream. I'm not smoking in real life, so I give myself permission. And then that night I had a dream that I'm sitting there smoking and telling my friend, I got permission to smoke. I got permission. And I never smoked in my dreams again after that. I thought that was really awesome. I didn't realize that, you know.
Your dreams are just about your thoughts anyway, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't realize that you were the one doing the dreaming, and that the dreaming is just a continuation of your day-to-day thoughts. And it's about love. It's about acceptance. It's about denial. It's about shoulds. It's about, you know, my dreams are my brain continuing to function even when I'm asleep. And the only thing that's not functioning is that filter that would say, you know, make sure you don't snore or drool or that your hair looks good. right? But my brain is still the thing producing what I experience as dreams.
Right. Well, that's what I love about dreams, because then you can work on things without having to do it, wait for it to show up in your waking life, right?
Yeah, or another way to look at it is I can use my dreams as a counselor, as another source of insight and intuition, as another mm-hmm. data point. So, yes, it's entirely doable to do a worksheet on that dream content and just figure out what the most relevant thought is with the negative emotional state and what the most, even if it's the most general, what's the goal? And I gave you a pretty general goal, which is to just be in control. And how did I come up with that? Well, because you said that this dark entity was taking over.
Right.
Okay.
Coming
so,
inside my body. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just guessing and using that very general term, and you could put that on your worksheet to probably start, you know, getting even better results.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was curious about that because, you know, generally whatever my issues are, I face them in my waking life. But this is something that, you know, just happens in my dream, so my dreaming life. So I wasn't sure. But,
well, I would,
you know,
encourage you to do it. It's been a very useful process for me over the years.
Okay. Okay, I will. And I'm going to do this other thing, too, where I'm just going to tell myself that it's safe to surrender to whatever I encounter in my dream.
Yeah, see where it goes. It's
yeah.
You know, it's the kind of thing that you can allow yourself to have fun with, play with it. It's a dream.
Yeah. Right.
It's not
I
real.
Mean, you don't think, but when you're in it, you don't realize it's a dream. That's the problem. That's the problem. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. I did one time, I remember when I had one of those dreams, I had the thought of asking Jesus for help, which is like something I've never really done before, but for some reason that came to me in the dream, and it instantly went away. You know, that darkness when I called him in. So I guess that's another thing. But you know, I don't know if, at this point, I don't know if it's something that I want to go away. Maybe this is what I've been asking for, like you said. Maybe I've just been afraid to welcome love in, you know. Maybe, like, I don't know what love feels like, so maybe I've just put a scary interpretation on it. So I don't know. I'd be curious to know if anyone else has dealt with anything like that.
Well, and even if they have, it might be a very different process and meaning than what you're up against, right? Because the content of your dreams is about your mind, not somebody else's mind.
Right. And it might have also to do with the fact that I'm really beginning to realize how much fear I lived in throughout my whole childhood. And I think I kind of became maybe addicted to that feeling, because once I stopped being in the situations where I was kind of being, where I was being put into these situations that were so overwhelming for me, I started my bringing on the scariness myself by going to see scary movies and getting interested in things like, you know, evil spirits, and, you know, I started scaring myself which is crazy, which I don't do anymore. But for a long time, I did that. And I look back on it now and I think, wow, maybe I just got so used to that feeling of being scared when I was a child that I just felt like I needed to continue to have that feeling. I don't know. I don't know anything about, you know, I'm not.
Well, anything that we practice a lot becomes, you know, habitual in our thought. It's like, you know, the neural pathways get thickened and are more easily, readily acceptable. And so I love the way Abraham Hicks talks about this in one of the several of the different talks. People will get in the chair and say, well, I have this deep-seated, and Abraham will cut them off and say, listen, it's a well-practiced thought, but there is no such thing as deep-seated. If you've practiced it a lot and it's a habit, but that's all it is. And as soon as you substitute it for a different habit, the effects of it fall away. It's very much like the Course in Miracles where it says, you know, you need only return to the original error in thought in order for all of the negative effects of that thought to be dismantled. There's no need to panic here because you're the one creating your experience. And if you don't like your experience, as soon as you discover the ways in which you're creating it, now you've got the key to undoing it. Especially in the dream world. It's true in the what we call the awake world, but it's very, very much even more readily observable in the dream world. As you said with your example of, you know, the fear of smoking, and then you gave yourself permission to smoke, and then you had a dream where, oh my gosh, I have permission to smoke, and then you never had that terrifying dream again.
Right.
It was never about smoking in the first place. It was about your shoulds and your judging yourself and you're not accepting of yourself at many levels with other issues. Because that's what our dreams are. They're all about our thought processes. And there's another important thing that you said, which is very, very true, and a lot of people have lived out the truth of it. The dreams will keep coming until you get the message. So there's no need to panic about it. If you can't remember a dream, you either got the message it was intended, or it'll come back.
Yeah.
Kay Finley talks about how lessons will keep coming back until we realize that we haven't learned the lesson. And then we put ourselves in that open, allowing space, and we allow ourselves to be taught. I mean, he states that way for a very, very powerful reason. He doesn't say lessons keep coming back until we learn the lesson. He says these events keep coming until we realize we haven't learned the lesson. And then there's that aha, opening, allowing, questioning, and that's when the transformation can happen. That's when the integration can happen. So to begin with, to come back to the beginning, the first thing I said, do yourself a huge favor, and instead of talking about how this dream is so scary, talk about how, actively talk about in your own mind, or as you say it to others, how you have interpreted this dream so negatively that it's bringing up a lot of your fear, or it's resonating a lot of your fear. Just that is a huge proactive shift in perspective, which will help you.
Yeah.
And then go right ahead and do the worksheet on the dream and figure out what the thought is and figure out what the emotion is and figure out what the goal is and cancel it and see what you get.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more clear to me that it is about totally letting go of myself, you know, which I think is the same fear that is going to come up in every person the closer that they get to that letting go point. It's the fear you have to face. You know, you can run from it and run from it and run from it, which I've been doing. And it's becoming very clear that, oh, so this is that fear. What I've been asking for is what I've been running from. But it was only because I was interpreting it incorrectly.
Perhaps so.
Yeah.
Perhaps
okay.
So.
Well, thank you. That's been helpful.
Oh, you're quite welcome and deserving. Thank you for the call. Anything else in our last minute or so?
No.
Okay. Well, happy dreams.
Thank you. Blessings.
Blessings. So we have basically reached the end of our time. We have another hour coming up with Michael and Jeannie, and we have another support group tomorrow night and another one on Thursday. If you want to find out about that, go to mindshiftersacademy.org for all the login information. And feel free to join us the rest of this week where we're here 2 hours a day. And in the meantime, I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. You know, I had a dream one time that, and it was kind of a recurring, and this person was really terrorizing me. And in the dream, I told them if they didn't stop, I was going to wake up. So it was like I was threatening this person in my dream to wake up, and then they would be gone. So I thought of that when you were talking about dreams.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to be able to do, to be directive in your dreams and to recognize that there might be good messages in there for you, and to recognize that any negative emotion we generate in our dreams is completely self-initiated. So,
yeah.
Have a wonderful show.
Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Tim. You have a good one. Talk to you tomorrow. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, August the 9th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And so while we're waiting on Michael to come on, I'll just add too, you know, we have the conscious mind and the subconscious, and those two change places all the time. Michael uses the example of saying, you know, what's your favorite item of clothing? And that jumps into your conscious awareness and you're thinking of your favorite item of clothing. But then if he says, what's the front door of your house looks like? Now you're thinking of the front door of your house. You're not thinking of your item of clothing. So those things switch back and forth, and it's by pure resonance. Then we have the unconscious, and there is what's called the veil. You know, we shut things down. We don't want to look at it or whatever, and that's down in the unconscious. But when we're asleep, that veil is more open. So things that we have pushed down more easily come forward. And our waking realities come from the same place that our dreams come from, and it's just that it's more open. It was kind of comical. Night before last, I was dreaming. We have a farm. My dad has a farm, and it has cattle on it, and my cousin helps take care of the cattle because, you know, dad's not able to, I dreamed of helping my cousin Sean to herd the cattle and move them into another field. And when I woke up, it's like, why did I dream of doing that? And then I thought, oh, I was supposed to send him a check where they had sold calves, and he gets a portion of the sale, and that's his payment for taking care of the farm for Dad. And I thought, oh, I forgot to send him that check. And so even though money didn't have come into the dream, that's what it resonated in me, is that I needed to go ahead and complete something that I hadn't done. And it had to do with Sean, and it had to do with cows. So that was, so I think there are messages for us. Welcome, Michael.
One more level to it, sweetie.
Yeah.
What Sean had sold were the calves, and the cattle you were herding were small, about the size of dogs. So,
right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the conversation in the previous hour with Dr. Tim and Ellen was on dreams and how we can use them as a tool. And I was just talking about how the dreams, that the veil to the unconscious is more open at night. So sometimes our dreams are giving us messages from our unconscious level. And for me, that definitely was a message the other night. So
definitely there is a power in us that is always working for us. Actually, there's a very, very deep, deep conspiracy. And we hear about all these conspiracy theories. There's a very deep conspiracy going on in each life on the planet, and that is life itself is conspiring to heal us and to bring us the ultimate and the best outcomes in our lives possible. And that dream process is just, to me, is just one more indicator that there is a conspiracy. There's no question about it. And, of course, if we're holding on to energetic patterns that are destroying us, that is, if we're in some form of hostility or fear, that conspiracy might look like attack, because what life's going to do is come in and do whatever it takes to bring those untoward energies to the surface. And, of course, when they come to the surface, we get another opportunity to work through them. And another opportunity, and another opportunity, and another opportunity. And, you know, if we ignore the gentle little nudges and then the kicks, then, you know, along comes the cosmic 2x4. When are you going to pay attention to what's going on inside of you? When are you going to deal with this? And so it's a pretty profound system that is set up so elegantly through the law of resonance, the law of energy exchange, and that everything we hold on to in the way of energy, you know, by definition, energy is motion. And everything that's in motion sets up an energy wave. You know, if I drop a simple example, I drop a pebble into a pond and I watch the ripples go out. That's an energy wave. That's literally exactly what a thought produces in the energy field, is a wave just like that little wave radiating out from the pebble. And of course, if I have a little tiny pebble, there's going to be a certain size wave. If I throw a giant boulder in, there's going to be a different wave. If I'm standing in the space of active present love, there's a certain wave, a certain energy that comes from me that radiates out, just like the pebble in the pond has these waves that radiate out 360 degrees and call in or resonate, pull in through that energetic pattern whatever it is that I'm holding on to. So if I'm holding hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief and drama and trauma, it's going to seem like life is really conspiring against us because it's delivering all this hate and rage and guilt and grief and trauma. When I wake up and go, ah, I think I'll take a breath. I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. I'm the one that was there every time. Maybe this is about me. Maybe it's not about them. When I realize that, when I'm ready to take hold of and own the perceptual constructs of my mind, you know, there's a principle that needs to be reinforced over and over and over and over again. So I speak of it often. And that is that, and the reason it needs to be emphasized so often is because we've been so deeply brainwashed. I guarantee, what have we got, about 350 million people in America? I bet if we went and interviewed, or pardon me, million, if we went and interviewed 350 million people, at least 349,000, well, let's say 350,000 minus maybe a couple of dozen. If we interviewed them and said, do you have a set of eyes that you look out and see the world through? You know, 350 million minus maybe a few dozen people are going to say, yes, of course we do. And it's the biggest lie ever told. You have never seen anything through your body's eyes. And we can go deeper than that and say you don't even have a body, but that's another level of conversation. You know, you have an antenna, a receiver. The receiver doesn't send. It's not transparent. You can't see out through it. It's literally an antenna that receives light and converts light into electrical frequencies that cause brain cells to fire through resonance. And whatever moves within that field, whatever resonates, it's going to produce an output. And that output we call perception. Now, again, the world thinks, oh, I look out there and I see what's going on out there. No, you have never, ever, ever, ever in your life seen anything through your eyes. It's not possible to see anything through your eyes. I mean, thinking you can see through your eyes is about as silly as taking the antenna off of the back of your TV and looking into the wires and expecting to see out through the antenna on your roof. It's just plain silly. I mean, it's so obvious when you think about it, you talk about it. What is this world we see? It's a product of the resonance and the firing of brain cells. And every picture that you see exists nowhere but in your mind. And people say, well, how come everybody has the same pictures? Well, if the brain cells were built in common with someone else, then you will get similar pictures. But nobody ever sees the same pictures. You know, Queen of a courtroom. Watch six different people testify about the accident they saw. You'll wonder if any two of them were at the same accident. Why? Why are their stories so different? Why can somebody hear a political speech and say, well, it was this way, and somebody else says, no, it's that way, and they're exact 180 degrees out of phase, exact opposites? Because in one person, certain brain cells fire, and they heard what their mind was able to serve up to them in the way of evidence. The other person listened, different evidence, different biases, different goals. And their mind served up a totally different perceptual construct. Now, once you realize that that's so, then you realize that the human mind is a purely evidential device. Only evidence that you ever get to see through your mind is evidence of your own BS. That's belief system, by the way. If you had a different set of initials, or pardon me, a different meaning for that set of initials, notice that maybe your mind came up with something other than belief system. That's just an example of what I'm talking about. What perceptual constructs, what data do you have attached to any given circumstance or situation? If you have unresolved hostility or fear attached to any given situation, and you live in the world of denial. What is denial? Denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me. So if I'm in denial, let's say my mind's producing an hostility-based perceptual construct. And I say, yeah, I looked at that person and what they did, and they made me so mad. Now that I'm in denial, I have said to my evidential mind, the only construct you're allowed to show me right now, the only BS you're allowed to show me, is that they're the cause of my anger. And the mind complies. It will literally construct a world that is filled with fraud and lies and deceit. Now, there's an easy way to tell when your mind is serving you up something that's a lie and is in the realm of deceit. There will be hostility or fear attached to your perception in some form. What that means is your mind is lying to you. It is only a mind connected to conscious, active, present love that can produce a perceptual construct based in the truth. Now, we might get some accurate information about something happening. You know, the person crossed the street and did this, 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 and this. We might get that accurately. But that accurate information is not the truth. So the core of this work is to resolve, to remove, and in Aramaic the word remove means forgive, all content based in hostility and fear. Content. Can you imagine what your mind would be like if it were impossible for you to produce an hostility or fear-based reality? Like, how different would the game be? How different would the words coming out of your mouth be? How different would your behaviors be? Well, when you enter into the world of truth, that's the difference you get. That's what we're here to bring forward, is the tools for living in this world with a mind that is fueled by conscious, active, present love, because we experience ourselves as conscious, active, present love. And part of the work that needs to be done to do that is to heal all of the energetic patterns. And in this case, the word forgive, remember, doesn't mean I'm going to let you off the hook because this pain is moving in me. The word forgive means I've got a tool that I'm going to apply to this pain happening inside of me to remove it, to remove the lies from my mind. So we're talking to Richard about this whole process of taking responsibility and moving beyond the hostility and fear game. And I had just finished in our reading on Friday. I had shared a thought with Richard, the character in the book, and on page 97 at the bottom of the page, if you're following along, I shared the thought with him. Reason, when not consciously governed, can justify anything it can conceive of, anything it decides to do. You know, you hear people, you know, committing atrocities, this crazy stuff going on, and you say, how could anyone possibly do that? Well, all they have to do is have a BS, a belief system, that says, if I do this, then this is the result I'll produce. You know, like there was a time in history where, you know, maiming and beating and imprisoning and burning people to stake was a way to save their souls. People's perceptual concept. Now you'd say, wait a minute, these are holy people. How could anybody believe that stuff? It's easy. All you have to do is have a BS that supports it. Anything goes in that BS mind. And so when we wake up to, so the new measuring stick becomes, is my mind connected to love? Are the words flowing from me based in love, or are they based in something else? So I go on to share with Richard the idea, we live in a world where murder, war, and violence are justified and condoned. Verbal, emotional, and physical abuses are considered standard in many relationships and family systems. Parents lash out at children. You know, there's a story I haven't told for a while that's just so profoundly impactful. And it was actually told originally by a young woman in St. Louis who's been doing our work for about the last 25 years. And she's a massage therapist and a physical therapist, and she works with children and parents, especially with infant massage and raising children consciously. And she did the show with us for a little while back a couple of years ago. We did I think it was a Monday show we did with her. In any event, she shared about a woman who had come to one of her classes, and she was talking about child abuse. And this woman, you know, volunteered that she had given up abusing her child, although she didn't think of it as abuse. You know, when she was a kid, if you stepped out of line, you went out, you got yourself a switch, and you brought it back in, and you gave it to your parents, and they beat you with it. They hit you with it. They abused you with it. And so that was, you know, in her BS, that was a normal thing to do. That's how you discipline a child. That's how you keep a child on track. Well, if you look into the word discipline in Aramaic, the word discipline comes from the root disciple. It means properly taught. It does not mean, as the non-being mind's game is, properly beat up. So she sent her, I think it was a 5-year-old son, out to cut himself a switch. And he came back in with tears in his eyes. "Mom, the branches were all too high. I couldn't get one. So here." And he opens his little hand and hands her a handful of rocks. And she said, and he says, "Here, you can throw these at me." Whew. How bizarre. How insane did it get to defile one of these little ones? He listened to Yeshua 2,000 years ago. He says, it'd be better that a millstone be put around somebody's neck and they'd be sunk to the bottom of the ocean than to offend one of these little ones. For such is the kingdom of heaven. And this isn't theology. This isn't churchianity. This isn't religious. He's talking about the fact that we as human beings are literally made of the stuff called love. And by the way, the words kingdom of heaven, there's a total mistranslation out of the Greek. It doesn't say that at all. It's the community of love. So what he's saying is this, these little ones are naturally in the community of love. And what do you have to do to teach them to do hate and fear, grief and rage, and all that goes with it? And it's time for us to make a shift. It's time for that game to change. You know, our job as a caretaker of children is to recognize who they are as created love and discipline ourselves to be that space of love for them and with them and assist them through resonance by seeing only the truth about them. You know, every kid comes in with a carbon-based memory system and genetic history. And, you know, if you look around the history of the planet, some of it's pretty putrid. So just about every kid's got some putrid stuff. You know, they talk about a thing called the terrible twos. What is that? That's an expression of what's being carried in carbon-based memory and people bouncing up against that with their own hostility and fear as parents. When we live as we're designed to live as the adult in the room, we're designed to live as active present love. We are designed to bring that active present love into expression with the children and to see only what's true about them and assist them when the inevitable generational patterns of fear and rage and guilt and grief and drama start to surface. Now, usually, because it was inherited from the parent and the parent's the caretaker, the child goes into rage, and what does the parent do? "You don't dare do that. I'll rage out of you. Go get a switch for me to beat you." What did the child learn from going to getting a switch? Oh, this person, you know, the little kid who brings the rocks back in, this person is supposed to be cherishing and honoring me, wants to hurt me. Like, what do you suppose that does to a being that's designed to live as the presence of love? So there's a lot of work to be done on the planet, for sure. A lot of work to be done by each and every one of us. So I go on to have the conversation with Richard. We live in a world where murder, war, and violence are justified and condoned. The verbal, emotional, and physical abuses are considered standard in many relationships. And family systems. Parents lash out at children. Teachers think it reasonable in the name of discipline to verbally abuse, attack, and put down the children they're teaching. I was reading an article recently about some of the abuse in schools. There's one case where a girl burped in the classroom. The police were called and she was taken away in handcuffs, arrested. Another case where a young girl was angry and yelling, the police were called. In order to get her in handcuffs, they broke her arm. Now you can go on and do some research and see what's going on. What is the deal? What's happening in our world? Unresolved hostility or fear has taken over the game. So, you know, you look at what's coming about in the world, and it's like a child who kills is no longer an uncommon phenomenon. The media, I offer the thought to Richard, the media regularly portray little violence as acceptable. Family members at each other's throats, attacks, sarcasm, and put-downs are presented as witty, normal human interaction. Ever wonder why the divorce rate's so high? Healthy relationships are represented, modeled anywhere in our world or media. Richard replies, "Where have I been all my life?" He says he kind of fumbled for words. "I've never thought about how previous generations or the media impact us. Never occurred to me that the world could be any different. I never conceived that my hostility supports and contributes to the dynamic of violence in the world." And so the norm in our culture today is pretty bizarre and insane. We're inviting the world to wake up and create a new norm. Create a world where loving, gentle, respectful interaction between people is normal and portrayed as the way that life is designed to be lived. And we wake up to that, the whole game changes. And we're here to create a game changer. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of the process. We appreciate your listening ear. Our commitment is to make these tools available universally, freely. And so if we can support you, we would love to hear your voice. What does this conversation resonate for you? What does this bring up for you? I remember working with one young man back a few years ago. This guy was a pretty tough guy, military leader. His proudest moments were when he talked about how good a killer he was, how he taught people to kill so effectively. And I remember one day, it was probably after about 3 years, 4 years of work, we were doing a still point breathing session at Heartland. And this man went really, really deep into a still point state and touched into a memory that was so profoundly offensive and painful that even privately with me, he couldn't share it. And this is somebody who trusted me with a lot of information about his life and what was happening. But it was such a profoundly disturbing and painful moment, he could not even speak it. Something that had happened between he and his mother, could not even speak it. And so many people are carrying that around, either their own experiences with people, with parents especially, or other people in their lives, or even if it didn't happen to them, in their genetics. And the objective of this work is literally to uproot that right down to including the genes, remove those energetic dynamics. That's the act of forgiving. And when you look at the pain and suffering that most people are carrying around, it's unfathomable. And this man 2,000 years ago, who was not a theologian, the man named Yeshua, he's popularly called Jesus, was not a theologian. He was a physicist. He was a physician. He was a geneticist. He was a psychologist. He was a physiologist. He knew exactly how it worked. He spoke of critical mass in physics when he said a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And what he was saying is that if we wake up to who we are and start to function out of conscious, active, present love, then we literally become the energy that brings healing. When the pattern of the presence of love becomes strong enough throughout the world, it brings a space of safety where all of those hidden dynamics that so many people are living out of and don't even have a clue what it is that they're carrying around. They've so dissociated from it. We're here to support people getting a clue, and we're here to support people getting in touch. And the more horrific the experience was, the more important it is to bring it to the surface, to bring it to conscious awareness, to have practiced the tools of forgiveness to the point where you're willing to literally use the tools to work through those things, to let go of them, and realize who you are. And there are pitfalls along the way. That's why we do this radio show. You know, it's not unusual for someone to have one of those messages that came from their power person projected, you know, like, you know, onto a spouse, you know, a husband or a wife. Oh, when you said that, you were, it's like, well, are you sure that's what it meant? Or was that message your power person gave you that you're now projecting on this person? It takes time. It takes information. It takes understanding. And it takes the application, the conscious, consistent, persistent application of the tools to change the dynamic of insanity in the family system, in the community culture, and in the world. And we're here to do exactly that job. So we're delighted that you're here to be part of the process. And Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought?
No, it's all quiet. No hands up and no comments in the chat room. When you were talking about both being caregiver of children and their responsibility and discipline, and then you were talking about bringing issues to love, for healing. I just wanted to share something. Our daughter-in-law has been sick for a few days, and she actually went and was tested for COVID on Friday. She was that sick, but it ended up being just a sinus infection, which we're very thankful for. But Gabby had posted on Facebook, she said, "Sinuses are no fun. Aria gave me a quote-unquote checkup." You know, she plays doctor all the time. and she loves watching when the doctors come and work with Dad and everything. She's just in the anatomy card.
Profound.
We've shared all of the stuff that, you know, she's done, and it looks like she's pointed in the direction of medical, even though she's not three yet. But Gabby says, sinuses are no fun. Aria gave me a checkup and said, I want to help people with my healing and love. Then she goes on to say, I hope she keeps that mentality and we'll do everything we can to support her. Later, I ask her if she's going to be a doctor when she grew up, and she said, yes, but first I'm going to be a dinosaur. But she has the
healing
and
love part.
What
a privilege.
Yeah.
She's got it.
Yeah, we were talking about that last night, about how blessed we are to have the opportunity to be in her life and help direct her. And she's awesome in following, you know, and you can explain something to her and she's like, okay with it. She doesn't get upset and all. And she totally missed the terrible twos, which we're thankful for too. But it's just a matter
Absolutely.
Of how she was raised. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, I mean, she's only 35 months now, and she's understanding what forgiveness means. And, you know, we've introduced it to her very simply. You know, gee, sweetie, we see that you want something and that you're upset. But, you know, you could heal your upset. Notice, sweetie, that there's this and this and this and this and this and this, all these wonderful things you could be doing. But you're focused on this one thing that can't happen right now. So you know what you can do? You can cancel your goal for that. And I don't know, 99 times out of 100, she'll take a breath and she'll go, oh, let's play. Rather than continuing, you know, she'll start into an emotional disturbance, an emotional upset. Now, remember, this little one has been sitting, you know, the first year, just about every day of the radio show, more than a year, wasn't it, sweetie? Just about every day of the radio show, she'd be in listening to the radio show, awake or asleep. You know, many of you were on the show back in those early days, you know, you'll remember listening, hearing her little, you know, chirps and tweets and little sounds that she'd make. And you know, so she's got the brain cells, and now it's just, you know, it's amazing that she'll start into something like any kid will. And Jeannie or I will say, well, you know, you could do that if you want. And it's like, it's okay. And notice that you could be playing with, you know, another toy or, you know, whatever it is. So at 35 months, she's got this concept of canceling a goal. And understanding that if there's upset or pain in her that doesn't feel good, that's a question we'll ask her often, does this feel good? Is this what you really want to do? Well, if you'd like to heal it, if you'd like to let go of it, then you could just cancel the goal for that, you know? And it's just makes all these years of doing all of this so worthwhile. So amazing. So we're here to share that understanding, that information with you. And if you're out there in listener land, if you push one, we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's happening in your world? What's happening in your mind right now? Have you used the tools? You know, you can go to our website, WHYAGAIN.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the worksheet, you can push a button that says start here, that link. And that link will walk you through literally, and there's nothing withheld from it. It's all there. Everything we know about the process is laid out. You know, we do workshops, and yes, there are workshops that have fees involved, you know, while we do as much as we can do, you know, for free, we haven't figured out how to do it for nothing. So there are opportunities to pay for the work, but There, in the free work, it's all laid out. It's all there. Take it, use it, put it to work. You can do the forgiveness process and learn it and literally learn all about it. And when I say learn all about it, I mean I spent 35 years full-time before I finally comprehended what forgiveness actually means and why and how it works. It took me that long working full-time with the Aramaic teachings of Yeshua to really begin to comprehend that and then really understand it in a way that I could explain it. So if you don't get it the first time or the second time or the 10th or the 20th or the 50th time, that's okay. Just stick with it. You can also print the worksheets off on the on your own printer and do them at home. There are, I don't even know how many. Well, we've got 3,200 hours plus of archives for the radio show, all with conversations like the one we just had the last half hour, and some just phenomenal process work with many, many people who've been dedicated to doing the work. So it's all there. It's a process of building brain cells. You can go back to Yeshua, and he says, in order to do his work, in essence, what he says is, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. I think we can pretty safely assume that most everybody in his audience had what we call eyes and ears. It wasn't about physical eyes and ears. What he was saying is you've got to have the brain cells. Your brain can only generate, your mind can only generate a perceptual construct that you've got the brain cells to generate. That's all it can do. And my favorite, you've heard me do this one before, but it's a good place for it, is the word sin. Now, you know, many people in this culture, you say the word sin and they're turning tail and running because they've got so much pain, so much trauma. They've been called it. They've been forced to be it. It's just crazy time. But in Aramaic, the word is an archery term. And all it means, you know, if somebody was on the archery range and fired at the target, missed the target, the scorekeeper would yell, sin, you're off the mark. That's all it means. Now, if your brain cells for sin were some of the ones of the culture, the hellfire, damnation, you're a sinner, it's your identity, you've got to proclaim your identity to be safe. If you bought into all that garbage, and I mean garbage, it is garbage. It is nothing to do with what Yeshua taught. He informed people, if you're off the mark, then you need to engage in forgiveness. You need to remove that energetic dynamic from your mind and from your physiology. Now you look at the times where, and you know, the fear mongers that have taken those teachings and twisted them terribly are still using the threat. Well, wait till he comes back and then he's going to judge you. Well, go back and listen to the man. If you have any interest in what the man said at all, go back and listen to him. What did he say when they said wanted him to judge somebody? He said, neither do I condemn thee. I came here to be the presence of love, not to condemn the world. And there are people who are actually standing up there in pulpit saying, yeah, and he's going to come back and get ya. The fear-based, fear-mongering mind that have taken his teachings and twisted them beyond comprehension and beyond belief. It's just unbelievable.
We have a hand up.
Well, then let's say hello.
We haven't heard from this gentleman in a while. John Martin, welcome to the show.
Howdy, how are y'all?
Well, hey there, young man. How do you be? We haven't heard your voice in a while. You sound vital and strong.
Well, not quite.
What's happening? I know you've had some challenges.
I've kind of drifted, so.
Anything you want to share about that? Anything we can support you with in drifting back?
I've been listening for about a week again, and it's stopped taking myself hate back. And
well, that's a phase, John, of the healing process.
Start forgiving myself. Since the last time we talked, I've had a triple bypass, congestive heart failure, liver failure, pneumonia, and they just put a bypass in a week ago. So
John, my goodness.
I haven't been doing much myself. So.
Well, the first thing I'll do is just breathe with you then and hold the space for that breath of life to come into you fully that rebuilds all those things that have been interfered with and broken, you know, rebuilding
like
it back to perfect function. And rebuilding
like
it, John, because you deserve it.
I've just been within the realm of what we believe and what we talk and what we do on the show. I've just been so on the other side of it, trying to make myself happy, trying to make myself healthy and all this stuff instead of letting it flow through me in the last year. So that's kind of what I've noticed lately in the last few weeks.
Well, it sounds like it's been a pretty rough time, but it sounds like you've given yourself a wake-up call and you're starting to see another side of it. And that's what it takes to build the brain cells, you know. Sometimes getting to the other side of an insight isn't Dr. Feelgood on the way there. And if we've been taught to traumatize ourselves, then, you know, oftentimes it's in the process of traumatizing ourselves that we can stop and go, oh, wait a minute, I deserve something different than this.
Yeah.
And isn't it awesome that medical technology is there to rebuild your heart for you and to secure your liver function and, you know, that you've got that kind of support?
Yeah. How we can self-destruct ourselves and yet some way they've come up with people and doctors and messages and spirits that'll heal ourselves. So
yeah.
I guess that's where I'm trying to get now is to get back on the path and try to heal myself again.
Well, remember one of the first and most important pieces of that puzzle is to simply allow yourself to breathe. And when you take in that breath of life, along with it comes vitality and aliveness. And where we hold the breath is where we're locking out an energy that doesn't belong. So I breathe with you. And, you know, they talked about, you know, the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. And the temple we're talking about is not a church, and it's not a purple curtain in a church. It's literally the barrier between our own subconscious and unconscious minds. And so it's the breathing that opens to allow us to access those things that are damaging us on a physiological level. And so one of the first things I'd invite you to do is just to be, you know, come to a new level of awareness of really keeping your breath moving and keeping open to that active presence of love. That is your original condition, the original condition of each of us. And the only thing that's really true about us. So I breathe with you. Are there any issues going on in particular that in the emotional realm or the mental realm that we can support you with?
Oh, I guess part of it was I kind of fell off the wagon a little bit. And, a little bit. You either are or you aren't.
Yeah, that's true.
So
it sounds like some pain was moving, and you found a way to anesthetize your pain, eh?
Yeah, what other way did I know? I mean, my whole life I've, when I pain, when I hurt, even as I look at it as a kid, you know, I was beat when I had pain. So what do I do when I have pain as an adult? I beat myself, and I don't always catch that. I know
yeah.
It sounds like a
So would you be willing Yeah, would you be willing to put that statement in the past? I used to beat myself.
Yeah.
And recognize that you deserve to treat yourself lovingly, gently, and with respect. And as you become more connected with the willingness to do that, the deeper layers of that pain is going to surface. And so it's kind of like, you know, keeping your attention on where you're going that's so important. Because the mind, when it goes into the healing process, brings up its trauma. And sometimes that trauma can get so heavy that we get lost in it again and just play out the old pattern. So spending more time, you know, my suggestion would be that you take time every day. And, you know, I don't know whether you meditate or not, but just being still and being quiet and focusing on the fact that you deserve to live as the presence of love and cultivate your relationship with active present love. And it's inside of you. And, of course, as you go deeper into that love, the layers of pain and trauma that have covered it over, not only in your own life, but oftentimes in your generations, will begin to surface. And that's why if you do, you know, that meditative practice of cultivating the presence of love, and it can be just as simple as, you know, just doing some breathing and focusing on, you know, what brings you to a space of connectedness with love and cultivate that and strengthen that and breathe into that.
It was like, I don't know, I meditated and something. You know, I was doing everything for a while, but then I just, I took myself out of the state of love so far that I didn't feel comfortable doing that. So,
I hear you. And that,
I need to get
that's a part of the healing process. You know, when I open a new dissociated part of my mind and find pain there, the tendency can be to get lost in the pain. And as I keep moving forward and consistently, persistently doing the work, the next time a layer comes up, I remember, oh, yeah, this is it. This is where I stay connected to love. Yeah, here's my self-hatred or my self-vengeance or, you know, my old trauma or, you know, how I was treated. And what I remember more deeply than that is that I'm deserving of the presence of love. And I'm going to hold to that. Cultivate and strengthen that awareness, John. And when something less than that surfaces, it's kind of like you'll have that in the bank to count on. But you have to take the time to do it. You have to discipline yourself to do it in order to put that in the bank and have that to call on in stressful times.
I seem to have done that for quite a while, but then I kind of slipped. Slipped away from my mind.
Well, and usually,
slipped away from my morning meditation.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, usually we slip. Yeah, and usually we slip, John, when the next layer that needs to be healed is coming to the surface. And so I suspect that your practice opened a deeper part of your mind that was ready for healing, and the trauma there just, it sounds like, overwhelmed you.
Well, how do you know if every time you get to a next level and it overwhelms you and you want to go do what you're not supposed to do and you don't want to do what's good for you and stuff, how do you keep going on? Because naturally your body is trying to self-destruct you.
Yeah. Well, that's where I was talking about, you know, putting money in the bank. When you are awake, when you are aware, take the time to cultivate your relationship with love, your awareness of love, and breathing in the presence of love so that that strengthens in you. You know, it's kind of like, it's like you listen to the ancient scriptures and they talk about the still small voice. If you don't strengthen your awareness of that still small voice, then when the screaming memes come from the painful mind, it's obliterated. There's no awareness of it. But if I strengthen my awareness of it, if when I am sane, and I am connected, I take the time to practice that connectedness. And, of course, you know, the other side of the equation is doing the worksheets to weaken the screaming memes so that the next time that surfaces, I can stay conscious and I can stay in awareness of myself as love. And when I get to the next level of vitality of doing that, the next depth of pain is going to come up and it's going to scream loud. If you've cultivated the strength aspect of it, then that's going to become more and more available to you, more and more readily, more and more easily. And it's a practice. You know, if I'm going to learn a new language, what do? I practice the new language. I don't go to, you know, French class and I learn that, you know, this particular set of phrases means this and I never speak it again. And then when I go to France, I expect to be able to speak it. How am I going to speak French when I'm in France? Except by, as I'm learning it, to practice with it. You know, it's kind of the rule of the three P's, practice, practice, practice. And so now that you've come up, you know, I'm glad you're here asking the questions and sharing with us what's been going on. And now that you are, here's the next level of support and here's the next level of healing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's everything I've kind of slipped away from. That's my next level.
Michael, if you're talking, we can't hear you.
No, I'm just listening right now, sweetie. And I'm with you, John.
If I look at my history and in my past, of even before I started doing this work, that like having 20 years of sobriety and falling off the wagon and doing it after 10 years of sobriety and falling back off the wagon again, I seem to get to these points and subconsciously or consciously, I don't know what the hell you would say, that I seem to do that. So how do I become aware of myself that, okay, I'm getting to this point that this is really where, this is where it all happens again. With my own self-deception and my own self,
yep.
You know, self-hatred.
Right. And so, remember, it's a two-sided process. There's one, and I'm strongly urging you to spend time every day cultivating your connectedness with love. That's one side of the equation. And the other side is applying forgiveness to remove the self-hate, the self-loathing, the habit of I need trauma in order to exist. And letting loose of that. And so, you know, you've got a whole array of tools that you've been practicing now for several years since Michelle introduced you. And, you know, it's kind of like the mind wants to say, look at, I failed, therefore I'm a failure. You know, let's imagine, you know, like we were talking a little while ago about our granddaughter, Aria Rain. You know, at a point, when she would try to stand up, she would fall over and she would fall over and she would fall over and she would fall over. If at some point we'd said to her, well, you know, you're a failure at walking, so you might as well just stay down, she might never walk. Each time she failed, quote unquote, what appeared to be a failure, she built a little bit more muscle memory about how you stand up and how you walk. You know, we've got one. I have on my phone, my home screen on my phone, is a video of her where she's about 16 months, I think. And she's just starting to walk and she's teetering a little bit. And her dad puts her down on the sidewalk. We're down the sidewalk maybe 10 or 15 feet. And there's a huge crack in the sidewalk. And she, you know, Dad puts her down. She looks at us and she comes walking in our direction, kind of, you know, teetering in our direction, actually. And she gets to this crack in the sidewalk. And like you can just see that she can't imagine stepping across that crack. And so what she does is she turns and she looks at her dad, who has walked along the sidewalk with her, is a little further down the sidewalk than she is. But she gets to this crack, and it's obviously a disturbance point for her. And she turns, and she looks up at him, and she puts her arms up like, I need help. I need support. And he reaches down and takes her hand and walks her across the crack. And to me, it's just such a powerful metaphor for each of us when we're learning to walk as the presence of love, that when those old hostility and fear-based thoughts come, we need support. So I'm glad you've recovered enough to pick up the phone and call us today and to be here in this conversation and to go to the next level of your work. It's pretty awesome.
I will try to get to the next level. I will start meditating more. I had a breathing friend, and I've been so emotionally wasted that I haven't been able to do that. But I guess a bad breathing session is better than no breathing session at all.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the healing process, do you get texts on this phone, John?
Get what?
Do you get texts on the phone that I'm talking to you on right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to send you some links. There were a couple of radio shows. There's another naturopath that I know, and we had a conversation about the whole healing process and what healing looks like. I'm going to send those links to you and invite you to listen to them. And you'll see where the pitfalls are and what the healing process looks like. And, you know, when we open and go to the next level, the healing process looks just like the disease process looks. And we can get stuck and get lost in it. Whereas if I've got the brain cells to recognize, oh, I've just opened another layer. I don't have to get lost in this. I can breathe. I can stay conscious. I can bring love present, that I don't have to fall into my old dynamics. So, Jeannie, if you would get that number and text it to me, and I'll send
have.
You the links to this.
I just said I've already
sent
it to you.
All right, so we're down to the last minute or so. So I'm just going to say that we're here to support you 100%, and, you know, if appropriate. And there's more moving tomorrow. Let's have another conversation tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next and the next, if that's appropriate.
All right, blessings to y'all. Thank you.
Okay, young man. Holding you in our hearts, deeply in our hearts. Holding in a blessing. And everybody, thank you for joining us. It's such an honor and a delight to be able to do this show and make these tools available. I invite you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.